This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Peter McGillivray,
Jane Bolton,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Peter, you were talking about your time as a student and staff member at Massey Agricultural College and then university, but you also mentioned class reunions.
Oh, well, one of the features of Massey was that nearly all the students were residents. There were very few students who lived off the campus. There would be people in Palmerston North, like my classmate David Joblin that I referred to earlier. So that there was a bond developed during in the case of diploma students, 2 years, in the case of undergraduates, 3 years, and then on to master's degrees and the odd PhD. So those bonds, they persisted year after year. And I happened to be lucky enough in my class, where we started at Massey in 1949, into the first year of agriculture. In those days, you had to do your intermediate at one of the four main universities, Auckland, Wellington, Otago, Christchurch, along with engineers, medicos, I don't know who else. And mine was at Victoria. So there wasn't much, you got no connection really with Victoria. You lived somewhere in Wellington, you trudged up the hill every day, you were in a big class doing your intermediate, and your sole aim was to get rid of that to get to either Massey or Lincoln, where you were going to study your agriculture. So it started because you lived together, you ate together, you played sport together, you developed relationships. And in my particular case, I'll speak about my class. It started off with about 26 people, and there was one girl. She was one of the 12 MOG girls, the one girl studying agriculture. She was of Polish extraction. Her father was a Polish scientist studying rabbits here in New Zealand, the Count Wadzika. And we had one Chinese chap who came out here about 1947 to escape the Sino-Japanese-Chinese War. And his father was a university person studying the silkworm. He was a major centre of knowledge for the silkworm. And during that war, he was packed up with all his silkworms to go west, to the far west of China, to save all that information about silkworms. That's T.S. Chang. There were 23 or 4 others. Now, we had our first reunion. I think it was to signify 40 years from leaving Massey. We had that at Massey, and it was whatever 40 years was after 1949. We've had numerous reunions since then. Jane has some friends from the 1957-58 diploma course. It was a 2-year course, and those people are still having, those that are left, are still meeting and having reunions. They were an important part of the growth of Massey, which has developed into, of course, the Alumni Association. And on another occasion, we'd referred to the name Old Students Association, which grew into Alumni, thanks to Bob Barton and his visits to America. Now, there's nothing very formal about these. Nobody's written them up formally, but they're still enjoyed. And in fact, the 49ers had the most recent reunion last December in 1919, when 5 of us got together in Wellington. And the diploma class are still having reunions.
Yeah, 70 years later, yeah.
So, yeah, we're, whatever it is, 70 years later.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
The last one we had in Australia, Fred wasn't there, sadly, but that was at Bergian Beach, where the fire started in October.
Oh, yeah.
That was the, I looked out the window, we'd only just arrived in the apartment, and I said, fire, and we were evacuated within 2 hours.
Oh, yes.
To... Wow. Noosa, north of, and we were there for 3 days before we were allowed back. And that was the beginning of the last lot of fires.
Yeah, that was the big fires.
Horrible. But at that, there were about six of the old boys there.
So did you find, the one thing I've heard about reunions is people get together after many years and they think they really don't have much in common with each other, do you?
No. quite amazing, really, these reunions. At some point, you gather around all in a lounge or somewhere, and the job is for someone to jump up and then move around the room. Quite amazing what folks have done. One of these books that's lying around here was written by a chap in my class, not a very good student. It took him quite a few long time to get his degree, but he was a good organiser, and he got involved with overseas agriculture. He first of all started, he was the person that I referred to about the Massey Balls. That's where he got his organisational skills. He then went to be a Department of Agriculture advisor in Taranaki. And he developed the farmers' days there in Taranaki. And at one stage, there were about 700 or 800 people in Taranaki attended his farmers' day. Of course, farmers' days in agriculture are well established. Ruakura would have about three of them, and there'd be thousands of people actually would go there. Another class member of mine was one of those, J.D.J. Scott, who helped organise those massive displays. One farmer's week at Massey, sheep farmer's week, they started in the mid-30s, early 30s, and by the time I came along, the veterinary lecturer, Wally Webster, who was quite a character, one of the things that happened, he was operating on a sheep, and it was relayed to the group through TV radio.
1930s.
No, that would be in the 50s.
It said TV radio. Was there an image or just a sound?
No, TV. He was.
Okay.
I shouldn't have said TV radio. On TV. So he was there cutting up the sheep, and it was then relayed out to the whole 600 or 700 sheep farmers meeting at the Massey sheep farmers meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was quite a draw card in those days. Wally himself was a draw card, and so the fact that you were small, you knew the lecturers well, this camaraderie developed, and that was carried on into the students' reunions.
Yeah. Did it mean then as well, though, the idea of one aspect of university, or where you go, you meet people and those connections are useful later? Did you find that a lot of people, their careers moved in parallel or overlapped?
Oh, absolutely.
Lots of connections.
Absolutely. Now, the student who was the very good organiser and then developed a career overseas, he was writing agricultural farm management books, and one of his sons, I think, is in the publishing business. What the details of it are, I don't know, but he has published about 30 odd books in all sorts of languages, and he's been giving these management courses right throughout Southeast Asia. In Sri Lanka, I think he's been there close on 30 times offering courses, offering courses there, and using other contacts that he made at Massey. In that instance, one of the contacts he made was Ron Schwoss. Ron Schwoss was a junior lecturer in botany, and he teamed up with Jeff Moss, and subsequently became the professor of botany at one of the Thailand universities. Major contribution to education in Southeast Asia. So the two of them had a really beneficial friendship. Mm-hmm. And there were others, many others beside that. Mm-hmm. On one of these interviews earlier on, I was trying to remember the name of the fellow who took the samples of Kumara to University of Hawaii. That was it was about the contribution of overseas students to Massey in the early years. Mm-hmm. He was Doug Yen. And the name Doug Yen stands proud in the botanical history of Kumara and the history of Kumara, including going taking it to Hawaii.
Okay, yeah. So, now to take a slightly different tack as well, obviously you've had a very long time in this part of the world and you've close links to Palmerston North. What's your impression of changes in Palmerston North in your...
Oh, well, I was an onlooker at one of the major changes. As some would even remember, when the railway went through the middle of the square. Mm-hmm. Well, I came down from Taranaki as a farm advisor there, having gone there because the 40 farmers could offer me more money than the University of New Zealand could offer me at Lincoln. I came down there looking for with a wife and two children, looking for some place to stay. And I went into a land agent there, Les Rieger, whose son lived and worked in the next room.
That's with not a, Paul Rieger.
With a divider. And there was a divider between Les, the land agent, and the next room. And in the next room was one Les Rieger, who had been a student at the dental school in Otago. And when Les Rieger, the father, wanted some bit of information, he would call over the divider, "Hey, dummy!" And dummy became a friend of, well-known and well-loved member, citizen in Palmerston North, and mayor for a number of years. A very well-respected and loved chap. And then was on the regional council as well.
Ah, you mean Paul Rieger?
Paul Rieger was on the regional council as well, married to Mary Mackay.
So that's how his father described him.
As many fathers and sons have a relationship like that.
Yeah, I just sent an email to him.
Hey, dummy. Well, Les Rieger, we were looking for this house. Les Rieger introduced me to a lawyer of Gordon and Gordon. So I was introduced to the senior member of this firm, and he had the big oak desk covered with material, and he smoked a pipe. And in amongst all the documents, there were matches, and there were bits of tobacco, and it took him a long time to get through any item because you had to light the pipe again. And however, he introduced me to a house, he introduced me to the finance for a house at 808 Main Street, which was about 10 yards away from the main trunk railway that went up Main Street. And we bought the house for... £3,200
at 808. It's not one of those stories where they say, "Don't worry about the railway; they're going to move it in a couple of months."
But we, for the first few nights, we couldn't sleep because of the railway. Mm. Within 18 months, the job at Massey running the hostels became available, and I thought, "Now this will be all right." And much to the amusement of my classmates, who thought it was the poacher being set to run the place. I got the job at Massey and then was able to rent the house out. But for the first few nights at Massey, we couldn't sleep because there was no train. what you get used to.
Yeah. So how long after that did they take the railway line out of Main Street?
Well, it wouldn't be very long, I don't think. That would be in 1958, and I should think it would be gone within 6 years. I'm just guessing there.
So how did that change the dynamics of Palmerston North? As someone who lived and moved around here, did it make much of a difference?
Well, to tell you the truth, I think it made a major difference, all right, because you didn't have the traffic-wise, for example, and the square is actually a big amount of land. Mm. It's a big area, and for the population, particularly then, it was probably too big, so you had to walk a lot or move around quite a bit. It was good for the Massey procession because they had longer and further to go around there.
But, where was the actual station?
The actual station was down Main Street, down about where the railway hotel would be. Opposite, skate park is.
Oh, and what they called the railway land.
Yes. It was a major railway station there. And it was still going when Jack Coogan, the caterer, came up from Dunedin, because I recall going in there to pick up him and his wife and the 6 children. No seat belts required in those days, so we all piled into the car and went out to Massey. That would have been well into the 60s. Yes.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. What about shopping then?
Shopping?
Yeah.
You had Collinson and Cunningham's. That was the big shop. You had Milne and Choice, where it became the DIC.
Or the library. Yeah.
And where the library is now. And, of course, the major thing was you had tea rooms at Collinson and Cunningham's. You had tea rooms at Milne and Choice. And then you had tea rooms, Joe Walding's tea rooms, among the PDC, where the plaza is now. So the tea rooms, they were quite important. When, as a wee boy, coming in from the farm in outside Masterton, the tea rooms there were at Hugo's, and it was a great outing to go to the tea rooms. And you were always looked over by your mother. You always left a cake on the plate. You never cleaned the whole plate out. You left something on the plate. Which is still an amusing thing in our family.
And you have a cup and saucer.
Nice cups and saucer.
Will you get dressed up to go to town for something?
In those days, talking about my early day in Masterton and the farm in Biddeford, it was a big event to go to town, because that would happen maybe once a week at the most, maybe twice a month, or may even be once a month. Because in those days, for example, ours would be a good example. We lived up the Biddeford Valley, and one day a month, a man would come out and take your order. In our case, it was from the Wairarapa Farmers Cooperative Association, the WFCA. So Mr. Brewerton would come out one day and take your order with his bow tie. And then the day after, 2 days later, the van would come out with your supplies. You didn't ring up and order the supplies. The man came out and attended to you.
Yeah.
Quite amazing, really.
So the idea of sort of shopping expeditions, when you look round lots of shops and things, that there probably wasn't that much choice, was
there? No, there weren't a lot of shops. We're jumping now to Masterton. The Wairarapa Farmers was WFCA. Right next door to them was C. Smith's. They were clothes.
Materials and fabrics,
yes. And I can recall Mr. Geary, he was there with a tape measure around his neck. And when you made your order, it was wrapped up in brown paper with the string put round his finger in a particular way, and he'd pull the string and it would crack, it would break. And then when you paid your money, it wouldn't be the right amount, so you'd put the bill, the account, the invoice, in a little thing above your head, and you'd tug it and it would shoot away through the shop. And
oh, you, so a vacuum.
You really enjoyed that. That's the bit you enjoyed going with your mother to do the shopping.
Oh, and yeah, shoot away, there'd be someone and
shoot away to
money things.
To accounts,
office.
To yeah. your the forerunner of your account, Stuart. Mm-hmm. And yeah. the girl over there would fix it up, pull the trigger, and back it would come with your change.
Yeah.
Quite amazing, those things.
Did you have an AMP show in Masterton?
Oh, yes, two shows.
AMP show?
You had the spring show and the autumn show.
Oh.
I can't remember which was which, but one was at Carterton and one at Masterton. Big events, really big events. So the show was, because the show also had sideshows. And although you weren't too much interested in the livestock, except when it came to be paid 2 or 3 shillings to lead a calf around the Grand Parade.
Mm.
You were always on hand to be ready to lead a calf. Mm. Yes.
Now, one thing that surprised, coming out from England, one thing that surprised me was I'd see shops advertising things for sale and they say, and Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
And I realised that's because they got a lot of the textiles and the towels and things like that in a, presumably a shipment from Manchester. But it meant that you would get things arriving in the shops in bulk, I don't know, just a few times a year, wouldn't you? So
I don't know how often they came, but the Manchester would be sheets and pillowcases and things like that. Not blankets. The blankets would come from New Zealand.
Okay.
The Whanganui woolen mills, Kaiapoi woolen mills. Yes.
Yeah. No, yeah, it just seemed very strange
for
Manchester.
It would,
but the I suppose you just treat it as normal, the idea that you just at certain times of the year there's a new shipment of things come in and that's it. Or was it something you were very conscious of?
I think they came fairly regularly, but certainly new shipment was a phrase, a term that I can remember quite well.
What's coming out in the next shipment?
If
you were short of something.
Yeah.
Until quite recently, really, if you wanted a particular type of newspaper or wall covering or something, it's coming out in the next shipment.
Amazing.
Well, so, Peter, when did you actually retire from Massey?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but I think it was about 1996.
Oh.
It sort of petered out over a little while, and there was another good fellow who took over. I've been to call the high-sounding title Director of Agricultural Diploma Studies.
Yeah.
And there was a very good fellow who was from a farm, who was engrossed in farming, although he was a well-trained researcher who was more qualified than me, who took over the job, and he has since just retired. And in today's radio, sitting here, here's the radio, is an ad by the Polytech, or no, the industry organisation, the ITO, advertising a diploma in agriculture. Join now for a July start, and away you go. For this is the thing to be in, agriculture.
Yes.
Yes. How incredible.
Where wouldn't have been everybody's
reading
of
moving
the,
away from that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Well, they're wanting more workers, farm workers, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
So this is the beginning.
People might be thinking, yes, with the virus and limited mobility, international mobility, then maybe...
That was very good.
Well, of course, Massey, in the early days of the university, they weren't very keen about agriculture either. And, in fact, one sort of published report was that one of his objectives was to move Massey away from agriculture. I think it would have been far better if he had said that we will build on agriculture.
Yes.
Well, what are now vet developed after the agriculture, but it's actually grown to be very prominent, hasn't it?
Oh yes, the Massey vet faculty is high ranking throughout the world.
Yes.
And locally, one of the really nice things that's happened there is Wild Base in the Esplanade, largely financed. by one person, Anne Massey. It's a, I would think, a world ranking enterprise.
Yeah.
A lovely place to be.
That's a sort of partly educational, but a recovery centre for for animals from the vet hospital.
It's brilliant.
It's a relatively new development. Mm. And linked up with there was a Rotary input.
And I think that the Massey Vet Building, I think, I'm not well up on that, I think it's about to be demolished and another bigger one replaced it.
Okay. I know they've expanded the animal hospital there. Mm. And so it's interesting, there's a pond or small lake by the vet tower.
And
of course you'd see ducks there, and sometimes you'd see ducklings, but not for very long. And you think, why? My youngest daughter qualified as a vet from there, but when she was very young, she used to like feeding ducks. Bread in, but it wouldn't be the ducks that were eating the bread, it would be the eels. Which is why you wouldn't see ducklings lasting all that long there, presumably.
That's right.
That's interesting about having a lovely little lake there now with a mosque at the head of it. Mm. In my time at Massey, up till the 50s, that was a gully that went right through the Massey campus, and a number of people would walk the girls back to Mog after the evening meal across the gully. When Massey was expanding with the Ministry of Works doing the job, with a chap who was a Kelly, I think his name was Kelly, the great friend of Alan Stewart's, that whole gully was bulldozed out and then filled in with a great big culvert in the bottom of it, and now you walk straight across from Bernard Chambers up to where the vets are. The gully has disappeared. But there was a gully there where that lake is now.
Yeah, and the ring road itself, there's a park there just by Pararata where you can see what
yes.
the name is.
Yes.
Well, now, and you've also, in fact, you have here, there are several books that have been written to sort of link to Massey and Massey personalities.
Oh yes, these are just a few random books there, but the one about McMeekin is interesting.
That's a biography by Gordon McLaughlin.
Well, C.P. McMeekin, Campbell Percy McMeekin, was one of the great names to come out of Massey in the late 20s or 30s. I think he might have been a student, if not in 1928, very soon after that. And earlier on, I had said, I wonder where these people, what books, what reference books did these people have? He went to Cambridge and started dissecting sheep, and then came with the great name Hammond. Hammond was the professor of physiology there at Cambridge, and McMeekin came back and was put in charge of Ruakura, which then was the Ruakura training farm, a very small place, and the idea was to train young people to being agriculture. And that developed under McMeekin very quickly into a world ranking animal production centre. Absolutely fabulous. Yes. And his offsider also was a Massey student, Lindsay R. Wallace. Lindsay Wallace was a contemporary of Alan Stewart's. As a student, they lived in the old hostel. And the story I have is that at the end of their degree, Bachelor of Agricultural Science, they piled all their books into a place at the back and set fire to them. that's how much they valued the bits of stuff they got then.
So you're saying a student who, when he graduated, he burnt all his books and then he became Vice Chancellor of the University?
Oh, yes. And in the case of Lindsay Wallace, the Director of Ruakura, still one of the main research animal production
Wallace
research places.
Research Centre, absolutely.
That was probably what ought to happen to their books, because there wouldn't have been a lot of stuff in those days. Hammond is one name that comes to mind. In economics, we had one, Brian Lowe. He did his PhD while he was at Massey. He was the economist at Brian. One of the early people at Massey was Dr. Dry, F.W. Dry, who was from, if I give him the wrong county, he would be very annoyed. He was either, I think, Yorkshire or Lancashire. I think probably Yorkshire. But he was a great cricket lover. And when you had your genetics lecture from Dr. Dry, which was an experience in itself, because you had the hairy lamb up on a plaque beside the on the side of the lecture room, he would couch his teaching in cricketing terms about so-and-so played with a very straight bat, and this was presented in Yorkshire language. But the hairy lamb, since we're talking about me, Peter McGillivray, one thing I did after I left the hostels, when my wife thought it was time to leave, and I'd always wanted to have a farm, there was a little 32-acre farm came up, and so I left the hostels, got myself embroiled in 110% owning debt to buy this 32 acres, and it was called Moirangi. And it had been owned by a fellow... thing is leaving me. The name of the farm was Tyack 1, Tyack of the Hoona 1, and Nils Peter Nielsen. Nils Peter Nielsen had this 32-acre farm called Tyack 1, producing a few stud Romneys. He went down the paddock one day and here was a funny-looking lamb just been born. Most people would have got rid of it, but no. He took it out to Nielsen, took it out to Massey, to Dr. Dry. And that animal, the offspring of that animal have become the basis of the Drysdale breed throughout New Zealand. Okay. The Drysdale, which is a coarse, hairy fleece. And I can recall with Dr. Dry having us look through the microscope at the wool that came off the hairy lamb. It was hair. It wasn't wool, so it had a hole in the each little strand of wool. It was a hole there, so it was a hair.
Well, that's like with a hole through it. You mean like the possum or polar bear?
Well, it wasn't your wool, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So that's
okay.
Became the and Dr. Dry was he was an eccentric. For example, he used to bring his used to take pure water from the Massey lab, carry it home in his backpack because he didn't like the treated water in Palmerston North. He would take it home to his wife, Mummy Dry. And Mummy was an authoress in her own right on the Bronte sisters.
Oh.
And one story I have of Daddy Dry, he had his wife, Mummy Dry, in the wheelchair, probably at the Milman Choice corner, and wanted to get across the street, but he could never just actually get the lights right. And the story I have is that Mummy Drive got up finally in disgust and walked across the street. Yes. But he was a brilliant scientist and an eccentric and a much loved person. Subsequently, the Alumni Association tried to find Daddy Dry's bike because he biked out to and from Massey. They never did succeed.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.